The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season two of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
We are 2 weeks away from round two and three of the NFL draft. The draft is actually less than 2 weeks away, Thursday, April 25th. I'm so excited for this thing to get underway. Bump, you are going to be on day one coverage from Seahawks headquarters. And I know that you are a crazy draft person. You sent this morning one of the funniest emails. Your show prep emails are typically pretty funny. Like, you got some good jokes. But this one was, what did you say? I've been watching so much film, I could make the case for drafting the stray cat in my neighborhood. You have been ready. Now, a lot of these guys we are going to talk to with some of these previews, but I know that a few of them are just not going to happen for Seattle. They are guys who are not going to be available. So I wanted to cover just some random kind of draft conversations that we won't otherwise have time to get to today, with the first being, who's someone that you kind of fingers crossed wish would fall? You know he will not touch number 16. But you're kind of hoping for some draft day controversy so this young man can fall all the way to the Seahawks, because you would love to have him here.
Yeah, I'm looking at the young man from UCLA, Latu. I think there's a possibility that he drops, but I also look at how he plays and the defense that the Hawks run and like what that makes sense. You know, he is 6'5", 295 pounds, ran a 4.64. I was so impressed. What game did I cover for UCLA? It was UCLA versus Washington State earlier in the season. And before the games, I walk down on the field and I kind of just get a feel for the team. Like, who's talking crap? What's the energy like? And obviously, I highlighted this young man. He was at UW and his story is crazy, right? He had a at UW, the doctor said he'll never play football again. He sits out for a year, gets clear. UCLA picks him up, and he was part of that. UCLA box was tremendous. It was crazy. So before the game, I go over to the big boys, the defensive linemen, and I'm just, you know, standing there listening and seeing what they're doing. And this dude's technique was so sharp. His hands were so quick. His steps were so violent. It was like I can feel the earth move beneath me just standing next to him. I go, one, it reminds me just how small I am. 5'11", 195. And I go, I used to be on the field with these monsters, right? It's crazy to me. Now, they're bigger, faster, stronger now, but it's still every time I go on the field, I go, it's crazy that a man my size is playing
somewhere
with
Tyler
these
Lockett
guys.
Is nodding solemnly.
Yeah, exactly. So when he gets down, don't hate, okay? He's saving himself. But Latu, I really think whoever gets this young man is going to get a guy who is technically sound and who plays with a tempo that I haven't seen out of a DN in a long time. So I like that dude. He's a tweener. He might drop just because of what's going to happen in front, right? We know 1, 2, 3. Maybe four, someone moves up, we're going to go quarterbacks. Chargers are going to go receivers. The Giants, you never know. Even they've been rumored to take a quarterback. Tennessee Titans, I think, is going to go with the offensive line. Atlanta, I think, is going to help that defense. Chicago at number 9 might help defense as well. So if he does go, you got to look at 7, 8, 9, I think, could be the spot for him. If he was available, I would look at Troy Faletano and be like, we got decisions to make, man. Between Troy, if he's available, and Latu Latu, if he's available, we would have to have a conversation.
You know, it's interesting. If I could wave a magic wand and choose one half of the team that could improve the most from last year to the end of this upcoming season, I would choose the defense. But I'm much more intrigued by offensive players with that first pick. I mean, Troy Faletano is who I've most commonly seen mocked, and I think the pick that I like most. But if I could choose a guy to slip and fall, I'm looking at Joe Alt. I'm looking at Bowers.
Alt ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. Oh, he's not. Absolutely
Man,
not.
That'd be nice, though.
Well, let's bring on Robert Turbin and see how he's feeling. I'm going to actually start with quarterbacks. Bump and I had been talking about it. But Turbo, joining us now on the Amber Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, how would you feel about the Seahawks drafting a quarterback? And I'm saying anywhere. I am saying it doesn't have to be in the first round, but drafting a quarterback in this class. Do you think it's important?
I think so, just because, you know, Geno's a veteran. Sam Howell's a young guy, but in my bad, I couldn't even hear you guys at first at the introduction stage, so I got kind of mixed up there. But yeah, I think the point of bringing a young guy to develop we've seen some of the success stories as far as young quarterbacks who don't have to play right away. They can sit back, they can learn. You got two guys in the locker room right now that a young quarterback can learn from and compete with potentially. Sam Howell's a young guy, so eventually, if you still like him down the road, he can compete with, you know, whoever you draft in this year's draft. So I think it's important. I don't think they have to draft somebody high just because I think that, you know, Geno can still, you know, be the starter this season and maybe even beyond. But getting a guy that you can develop the way that Mahomes did, the way that Jordan Love did, Aaron Rodgers even, and some others, I think it would be important for Seattle's future.
Turbo, is there somebody that you think won't be available? Stacy just asked me this question. That won't be available at 16, but you wish that he was, and if he was there, you take a shot at it.
Oh, man. A guy that won't be available at 16 and wish that he was is probably one of those top quarterbacks that I think would be good for Seattle. Maybe even Brock Bowers, the tight end, is probably a better answer at 16. I don't know if he's going to be there. I think the team probably trade up for him. Not a whole lot of tight end needs, you know, early in the draft, but he's definitely a top 10 talent. I think somebody jumps ahead and gets him. I don't know if Seattle would be a team that want to jump up and get Brock Bowers, but, you know, you pair him with Noah Fenn, I think you got a nice tight end duo there.
Yeah, I agree. He was another name I was looking at, too. It would just be a fun one to have. Hey, Turbo, I want to talk about culture for a minute here. We read reports coming out of Seahawks headquarters like, oh, man, the hoop is gone. No basketball hoop. Mike McDonald maybe a little more buttoned up than Pete Carroll. And who knows how that's going to play out. Maybe it works totally fine. Have you ever, as a player, gone from one team to another where the culture was just drastically different? And what was that experience like?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, when I started my career in Seattle, you know, you had one way of doing things. And then when I was released from Seattle after I had a high ankle sprain, you know, I was claimed on waivers by the Cleveland Browns. And the Cleveland Browns, they had the first pick in waivers that particular year. It's funny because we had a conversation with the Browns beforehand. They wanted to know, like, hey, if I were to clear waivers and become a free agent, what would be the interest level to go to Cleveland? And our answer was slim to none.
Yeah.
Okay. Just because of the culture and the way that things were going on over in Cleveland. So they didn't care about the way we felt. They brought me in. And I mean, it was just it was a complete difference. It was a locker room divided. It was a locker room where guys talked a lot of trash about each other. There was no trust between players and coaching staff and management. The organization, even at like practice and things of that nature, were not there. It was actually quite surprising for an NFL team. You know, then I go to Dallas. Dallas is a little bit different. It was a little bit entertaining. You know, the things that you maybe hear on the outside about Jerry Jones, some of those things are true. You know, he pulls up at practice with the all black. I'm talking about on the field, like on the sideline, security, everything. That's different. You know, I don't see very many owners or GMs pulling up to practice right on the field like that as practice is already going, you know. And then Andy was his own culture. So, yeah, culture always changes depending on the team that you go to. You have some similarities, but a lot of differences.
How important do you think that that first meeting was for Mike McDonald? And what's something that you think he had to make sure that he got across to the squad?
That first meeting was huge, Bump, because he had to establish who he was as a person and as a coach to his team. He had to relay that to the guys. He had to be honest about it. His players can sniff out BS pretty quickly. So he had to establish, hey, this is who I am as a coach, as a person. And then he had to establish who we want to be Like, what are goals? You can't really establish and say this is who we are, because you haven't identified that yet. You still have to get to know each other. But you can set a goal as it pertains to this is who we want to be. And players, we need that. We need that. We're goal setters. We want to rush for 1,000 yards. We want to, you know, win a Super Bowl, et cetera. You know, in the off season, we want to get faster. I want to squat more. You know, we're goal setters. And so, hey, this is the identity of who I am as a coach. This is the identity I'd like to be as a team. And you make that clear. So now when you go to meetings and when you go to practice and when you're watching the film, that's always top of mind as far as, hey, this is the team we're going to become as we follow and get behind our new head coach.
How quickly were you won over by Pete Carroll? I know when you got there, he had been, or when you were with the Seahawks, he had already been coach. It's not like it was his first year, but like, how quickly were you like, yeah, I'm buying into what this guy is selling?
Yeah, day one, you know, day one. It's not always important to be bought in day one, but I mean, when you're a rookie, you don't know what you don't know, right? And but the culture was already established. It was easy to buy in because everybody else was bought in. That culture of who, you know, we were as a team in Seattle, you know, it was already there. So for me, it was like, hey, I was either going, you know, get on a train, or I was going to be on the outside looking in at some point if I did. So it was, you know, it was pretty easy. I think the one time it was also pretty easy not to buy in Cleveland. You know, but I think the one time that I struggled was probably my first year under Chuck Pagano with the Colts, where I didn't immediately buy in 2016. And, you know, it almost actually cost me an opportunity to be with the team, you know, that season and the following, you know, two seasons after that. I remember Coach Pagano, you know, coming up to me, says, he specifically says, hey, man, you got to buy in, you know, if you want to, you know, be successful, have some success on this club. And so the buy-in part of it is important, because if you don't, you'll be on the outside looking in, and you won't have the type of success as an individual player that you have. So, and buying in means sacrificing. You know, you got to probably play some roles that you don't want to play. You know, I wanted to be a running back, but there were other roles that I needed to buy into in order for me to have success. And once I did that, that's when things started really going on in a positive way for me.
He is a former Seahawk, current NFL analyst, Robert Turbin, kind enough to join us on a Friday. Turbo, have a good weekend, man. Thanks.
Thanks,
Turbo.
Have a great weekend. Peace.
See ya. Before we get to headline rewrites, Turbo talking about culture was really interesting to me, because to me, Bump, one of the more interesting storylines for this Seahawks season, to which we don't know the answer, is what happens if Mike McDonald starts slow?
Mm-hmm.
You have no, as you would say, you've made no deposits.
Yeah.
You have no culture of winning. You haven't proven anything other than you're a really smart defensive coordinator. How do you get guys to buy in, believe, and importantly, keep believing if you start losing early?
I think it's important that they see some of the things that they coached up show up on film. Even if it doesn't show up 100% of the time, they're not executing the way they want to. If there's something that he leans his hat on and says, we are going to be great at blitzing the quarterback and getting these exotic looks with these twists and all that stuff. If they can look on a film as football players and see that and say, okay, I see where he's going, I think that keeps the buy-in us as analysts and hosts and consumers. I think we have to be patient, one, going into the season, but then look for those little battles as well. We're not going to have the scouting report like obviously the players are going to have, but there are some things that we can are they better at tackling? How are they playing the football in the air? Is the safety deeper than the deepest receiver? Those little fundamental things that we missed last year or didn't see enough last year, I think we can look at that and say, all right, if that's showing up and that offense is still moving a rock, you can be patient for a few weeks. But as you know, if you start the season, I think like 0-2 or 0-3, the chance of you making the playoffs go down to like 20% or something like that.
Yeah, I think that the last team was, I think the Bengals started 0-2 the year they went to the Super Bowl. And I remember talking about that stat because it was surprisingly uncommon to have a slow start and still make it.
I'm sorry, lean your hat on.
Did you say lean your hat on?
I guess I did.
That's a Jake-ism.
Hey, hang your hat on.
Hang your hat on.
Wow.
Lean your hat on.
I can't believe you and Jake said the same one.
He said that?
He said, yeah. He said it's like, he said a lot of things, though. He said it's like pulling magic out of a hat. Didn't he one time say it's
like
pulling
magic out of a hat? Yeah, you have nothing to lean your hat on.
Do we have other Jake? We got some good Jake-isms in there. Like Jake struggled with a couple things. Well, God love him. We love that guy.
You stick to it. You trust it. You continue to believe in it. You continue to, you know, plant the seed and grow water.
Plant the seed and grow water.
Bump, at least you never said that.
Plant
what do you mean that's good?
I mean, it's just,
you see the vision.
That's a gift to be able to do that.
We miss you, Jake. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Headline Rewrites.
Headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, the Mariners open up a 6-game homestand tonight against the Cubs. Only on Apple TV Plus. What's the real headline?
This is year 3 of Apple TV baseball, so Wyman and Bob are running out of excuses.
Figure it out.
Figure it out, guys. Please.
Wyman's got a young daughter, I think late 20s, I want to say. Maybe she can help figure that out. Bob has resources at his disposal. Maybe he can figure that out. But I believe in them. I believe in them. They're going to get this done because it's our job. We got to watch these games. So figure it out. But I just hope the Mariners have figured out how to put at-bats together, how to support their arms on the mound, how to continue to play solid defense and make some, like, you got to make some plays sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to make the catch over the shoulder. Sometimes you got to make the diving play at shortstop and get up and fling that thing. You have to make some plays sometimes. That's what it comes down to. Good decisions in the box. Make some plays and protect your arms, man.
Which of the following choices? Now, pretend you can only have one. So this is not going to be a complete dominant game in this case. Which of the following options leaves you feeling best about this team? Number one, they strike out less than 4 times. Mm-hmm. That would be insane. Number two, Julio hits 2 home runs. Mm. Number three, amazing defense, like a couple defensive gems. Number four, an amazing pitching, dominant pitching.
Which
Miller.
One do I want?
Yeah, Miller on the mound.
I'm going with Julio because he ain't gone yard yet. He has 1 extra base hit so far this year. We need him to go. Julio makes this thing go. Everyone else kind of pushes it along the way, but Julio is the turbo. He's the nitrous. He makes it go. So I love it. I need to see it.
Now, I know a lot of people have reservations about Apple TV Plus and their Friday Night Baseball, but I believe, if I remember correctly about last season, there is an option to change the audio to the Seattle Sports broadcast audio. So you'll hear Rick and I believe Dave Sims tonight. So that exists.
So you could line up.
You gotta kind of mess around with the settings, but it can be done. And also, Apple TV's camera is the clearest of any sporting event of all time.
It's amazing.
It's better than real life.
Yes, it is. I understand the frustration of people who do not typically use streaming services or their smart TV apps to watch things because it can be annoying to change routine no matter what you do. However, the quality of this game, like the viewing experience, is second to none.
Yeah.
Every time it's Apple TV, I'm like, here we go. Let's do this. I'm going to feel like I'm in MLB the Show.
Yeah.
It looks so cool.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number two, Ipe Mizuhara, Shohei Ohtani's former interpreter, allegedly lost $183 million in bets while winning back $140 million.
No, that's up.
But leaving himself with a net winnings of negative $40 million.
There's a difference.
What's the real headline?
And I thought I had a problem shopping on Amazon. And yet here's Ipe racking up a $40 million difference.
This is nuts, man. Maybe he should play golf or something, dog. I mean, it's an expensive hobby, but not as expensive as 25 bets per day for 3 years is what he was making. That is a clear addiction. And this is the tough part about this is that addictions are real.
Yeah.
It's like a real disease. Like there's something in his brain that allows him to get the thrill of spending other people's money and losing it, but betting every single day. So I don't want to ignore that.
Yeah.
But you also need to be held accountable. Even though addictions are real, some are illegal. And this is one that should be frowned upon. But again, there's no way Shohei didn't know he had a gambling problem. That is one of your best friends. You don't know that? Come on now.
Can I say the one thing that has struck me as kind of weird? And I think that addictions can actually develop quite rapidly. So I think this is... First of all, it's clear that he had an addiction, and that's sad, and I hope that he gets treatment for this and figures it out, because gambling addiction is very real. Like, people have likened it to, like, substance abuse.
Yeah.
It was weird to me reading through the document and seeing how much he was betting and how little he knew about betting. It's almost like you know what I mean? Like, he didn't understand how to wire funds to this guy. He didn't quite understand like how to place certain bets. Like, he had so many questions, and maybe he was playing dumb in terms of owing people money or wanting to borrow more. But to me, a lot of the text read as someone who is a gambling novice, and yet he was placing wagers sometimes as high as like tens of thousands of dollars per bet. That's just, it's a weird discrepancy to me, because I would think in your mind, if you're a gambling novice and this is something that's just kind of starting, you're not placing these huge wagers. You're not gambling millions of dollars away.
I don't do parlays. I don't play poker unless I'm with my boys. And I don't play a lot of table games in Vegas, because I don't understand it completely enough to go out there and be like, all in. Okay, what should I do here? I'm the guy looking around like, am I good here? Should I hit? Should I stay? Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
If you don't know what the heck you're doing, stay away from it. But again, that's where that addiction comes in. You know what happened? He hit a couple times and was like, oh, I love this feeling.
Yeah.
Hey, what if I'm gonna get this, I'm gonna flip that and make that into that, then I'll bring that back to Shohei. He ain't gonna know. Nah, bro, he got in way too deep. And 60 million later, here we go.
Well, it's like when we were reading about, I'm totally blanking on his name, but the young employee who was fired from the Jags for losing 20 million or stealing $20 million via their credit card program or whatever. He blamed it all on a gambling addiction. And again, I think with anything in life, there's a level of accountability that you need to have, and you need to be able to admit that you did something wrong, even if it is tied up in an addiction. Like, don't just be like, oh, I became a monster, I couldn't control it. Yeah, that might be true, but like, you also did this. Anyways, you reminded me of it, this idea of like flipping it and returning it, because he talked about at one point being so down bad that he knew the Jags would find out, knew that he owed them money, and wanted immediately to place bets to try to make up that day several million dollars in bets, because he was convinced that he could make it up and maybe pay it back and no one would know. Like, that kind of faulty logic of like, oh, I can just, no problem, I can dig myself out of this by just flipping it and earning a couple million today.
That's scary, man.
Yeah.
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three, round one play of the Masters was suspended due to darkness yesterday. So Tiger Woods has a long day ahead of him, needing to complete 23 holes today. What's the real headline?
Bump, you know we love you. Michael Bumpus might be more concerned with Tiger making the cut than he was getting cut by the Seahawks.
Yeah, exactly. You know why? Because I shouldn't have been cut. I should not have been cut. I was having a hell of a training camp. I got hurt at the wrong time. Then they start bringing in these slot receivers. They ain't got no hands. His stance, whack. His playbook understanding, whack. Me, I'm tight as you know what. Gosh darn it, shouldn't have been cut. Bullcorn.
Can we ask you during the break about the names that you were like, this guy was kept on the roster because he was a higher draft pick and I was not?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm so curious.
Got you.
Because I think, here's the thing. Kaysen Williams didn't become an NFL superstar.
He should have been
Neither
on the squad.
Did Amara Darbo. And,
yeah.
And Amara Darbo, and I will stand by this, was on this roster because he was a third round pick and Kaysen Williams was an undrafted rookie.
Kaysen was balling.
Yes, Kaysen had a better camp, period.
Yeah.
And I thought it was messy that players were talking about it and it violated team rules, but that doesn't mean I didn't agree with it.
Yeah,
so
he was the best receiver on the team during preseason.
Well, speaking of preseason, we aren't jumping that far ahead, but we are talking about the draft in the NFL. ESPN's Matt Miller says he's hearing about a name that the Seahawks have been interested in. Look, I don't know that there's a scenario where Seattle trades up, but if you're in love with this player, you might need to. That's coming up next.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Mariners group outings are a great option for all kinds of events. School family nights, fundraisers, office parties, and more. It's as easy as choosing a game and gathering a group of 20 plus. Start planning your outing today at mariners.com/groups.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, "Your dad has been hurt really bad."
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stream every Seattle sports show with the Seattle Sports app. Brought to you by Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center. Get new videos, podcasts, and articles on the Seahawks and Mariners from your favorite Seattle sports personalities daily. Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Take a look around the NFL. We are going to start with the Seahawks and the draft. ESPN's Matt Miller says he's hearing that Texas defensive tackle Byron Murphy, who has been mocked to Seattle, will not go any lower than number 16 with the Seahawks. He's saying the hiring of Mike McDonald as coach shifted how we view the Seahawks' needs. One constant has been at defensive tackle, though. The Seahawks re-signed Leonard Williams, but sources with the team reiterated to me this week that number 16 is the floor for Byron Murphy. Murphy's first step quickness and power are ideal in the three tech position and would boost the interior pass rush skills of this defense. So to me, Bump, I'm hearing the team might be higher on Murphy than they are. I mean, we don't know how they feel about Troy Fautanu, but yeah. That sounds like they're pretty high on Murphy.
I'm good with either one.
Yeah.
You go Murphy, you go Fautanu, you got a kid from Oregon State as well. I'm good. If you go Michael Penix, I'm good. But I'm raising an eyebrow. I think I'm good.
I'm good versus I'm good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the same word, but yeah. You know it feels different. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. I would have said the last 2 years that interior defensive line or defensive line or someone on the defense, period, is where they need the most help.
Mm-hmm.
I'm weirdly worried about interior offensive line depth because my assumption has been Troy's moved to the inside by passing on Fautanu if this is the case.
Yeah, I think, again, the offense will have to lead the charge. And if Fautanu was there, he will help immediately.
What's more important to you when you're looking at the trenches? Which side of the ball do you think, like, look, if you can get this right in 2024, this team can go pretty far?
I think there's three or four linemen at the top of the draft board who will affect your team more than the top defensive lineman at the top of the board.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
And that's why the Byron Murphy one, love the pick. We had heard plenty about him heading into the Sugar Bowl. He's a monster. However, this team only how many seasons now? A decade have we talked about this team only going so far because of its failures with its offensive line or injuries with the offensive line or inconsistencies or a rotating door at center? Just, you're not getting anywhere until you make that group better.
You know what's happening? You say defense wins championships, offense like sells tickets, wins game. I think it's flipping now. Because of the way the game is called, you can't be just physically imposing the way you used to be. I think offense wins you championships. Defense wins the battles that along the way, though. I think it's shifting. That's why, to me, there's more importance on making sure this offense is ready to go and let the defense kind of develop.
The NFL sent out their green room invites for the first round of the NFL draft. Brock Bowers and Notre Dame left tackle Joe Alt were invited but declined. Meanwhile, J.J. McCarthy never responded. He big-timed them to his invite, so the league moved on.
That seems like a J.J. McCarthy kind of move.
So J.J.
You know, maybe got lost in email. That happens to me all the time.
I don't think that's what happened.
You know how many unread emails I have right now?
I don't know that's what happened.
If Matt was here, he'd be disgusted. I got 1,100 unread emails right now.
What? Oh, my God. I'm going to look at
psycho.
Mine.
1,100.
1,100 unread emails?
One unread email, I'm freaking out.
Okay, I can't tell how many I have. Oh, 578. Curtis, how many do you have?
None.
None? whatsoever?
Well, I need you to.
I read all
well,
of my
Well, why
emails
don't you get.
And delete them.
I need you to subscribe
some
to
hobbies.
Some garbage and get
I need
all
you guys
these
to
garbage emails I get.
From all the garbage that you are a part of.
The bad part is that was my work email.
I will actually.
Oh, work? Hey, I had to find out the homie
so
was leaving.
I'm so sorry to everyone who's listening at work who has recently requested something from
I
me.
I will actually go. And put in the effort to unsubscribe from some email lists. Like I will
yeah,
click
but there's
on
just
the
so many. I've ordered so many things online, so many random boutiques and stores and random things that it's like impossible to comb them out. They're never ending. Someone said, that's cute. I have 38,000 unread.
It's crazy.
At that point, just get another email account. That's like if your house is so infested by spiders, you're like, just burn it.
You just go and mark them all as read and you're fine.
I don't even know if you can do that with 38,000 emails.
I've been there. You can do that.
That's insane.
It takes a while, though. Your phone, it takes like 20 minutes for your phone to catch up, though.
You, sir, the 206, have a problem. Even I thought I was bad with 500-something. The team most likely to draft Michael Penix, according to betting odds, the Raiders. FanDuel has Vegas ahead of the Vikings and Broncos to draft Michael Penix. The Seahawks have the fifth best odds. I saw a mock draft. I recently joined Q Myers, who does Raiders Radio Network and then also some national stuff, and he got a bunch of reporters on. So I don't know if he chose Penix or if a separate Raiders reporter did, but they had Michael Penix going at 12.
Hey, now, a couple years ago, I guessed correctly that D. Eskridge was going to be the pick for the Seahawks, and, you know, that is worn off. That shine is worn off. A few weeks ago, I said Raiders will pick up Michael Penix. All right? So I'm going to claim this. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you've been looking at, what you've been reading. A couple weeks ago, your boy said it. All right? So if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, I never said it.
Do you think that would be, that number 12 would be too high for Penix? Or do you think that he rightfully should be part
of
that?
No. He is the third best quarterback in this draft, in my opinion.
What? Behind who?
The third best.
I mean,
like
not behind
Caleb
who, but
Jayden.
In front of whom?
In front of JJ, in front of Drake, in front of Bo Nix. He's the third best quarterback.
You
it's
think it's
ridiculous.
All injuries?
It's injuries, for sure.
Well, how much of this, remember how when DK Metcalf was in the combine, he was an absolute monster, but he had had that neck injury, and his body was sick, and people were like, well, what if he just physically looks too good to be true? Like, what if this is all just like gym rat kind of dude who doesn't actually translate to the field? Like, that was the narrative around DK. And then it was like, wait a minute, guys. You have this athletic specimen right here in the second round. Why is no one taking him? And finally, the Seahawks did the most obvious thing they could possibly do, which was draft him. Do you think that's a little bit of Michael Penix? Not that he's an athletic specimen, but that it's so obvious he's like a good passer
exactly
and he's fine, and people are complicating
it's exactly
it.
What it is. ACLs ain't like the way they used to be. It's exactly what it is. Michael Penix is the third best quarterback in this draft.
Someone said set up an email filter that moves anything with the word unsubscribe to a different folder. Smart.
Yep. Thank
I probably
you.
Won't. Clearly we have bad habits. This is us going, yeah, for sure, we'll do that. In theory, I would do that. Stephon Gilmore is punching back at criticism of Bill Belichick following the release of Apple TV's documentary series Dynasty that details the Patriots teams of the 2000s. Stephon Gilmore said the following: just watch the Dynasty. Bill was the greatest coach I've ever been around. Don't let that fool you. I'll never forget. We were a predominantly man team during the 2018 season, all the way up to the Super Bowl. Y'all already know what Super Bowl that was. When we played the Rams, we switched to zone. He said, or him telling me to play trail technique in Buffalo because the quarterback can't throw against the wind when I was following a big-time receiver. If you've ever played corner, that's not a good feeling playing trail technique. I shut that wide receiver down to zero catches. That's cool insight.
That's great insight. I don't think anyone ever questioned that Bill Belichick knows what the hell he's talking about. I think they question his methods in communicating with a different generation. Gilmore, love you, bruh. Long in the tooth. You can connect with Bill Belichick way more than a 22-year-old coming out of Oklahoma. It's just different. No one questioned if Bill Belichick knows ball. It's the communication part and the control part.
I have an idea for Bill, and I'll volunteer myself as tribute. What if he gets a stylist?
That's tribute. What's what?
What if Bill just gets a stylist? What if the only thing we change about Bill Belichick is just his style and just the look?
Who should he dress like on the sidelines then?
I don't know. I'll figure it out.
I think
it feels like Belichick's entire wardrobe is just like free football gear he's acquired.
Yeah.
Right, but how about we make it instead? He's just fully, like, the drip is unstoppable. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, it's like, oh, we need to appeal to our Gen Z kings and queens. I know exactly what to do for Bill.
Remember I told you I hate when I see old dudes trying to dress like young folks?
Yes.
That's what I would see with Bill.
I think...
You got to be true to you, Bill.
I'm going to show you some outfits that I would have Bill styled with. And okay. You tell me if you were a 21-year-old wide receiver, if that would appeal to you.
JNCO jeans. Those are back now.
I know. We're going to switch gears, talk Mariners in our next two segments. What's behind the strikeout problem? A look around the AL West. Some good news here for the Mariners. And Brandon Gustafson joins us for the last time. Don't go anywhere.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Seattle Sports. 7:10 a.m. on your radio. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app. Get new videos, podcasts, and articles on the Seahawks and Mariners from your favorite Seattle sports personalities daily. Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
What's behind the Mariners' strikeout problem, plus a look around the AL West? I'm actually going to start with that second half bump. So here we go. Great news. And I know it's been a tough start to the season for the Mariners and their fans, but great news. No one is pulling ahead earlier, starting out hot in the AL West. So that you guys know, the Rangers leading the division at 7-6. The Angels at 6-6. Mariners are third. The Houston Astros are 4-10 to start the season. Astros fans not happy about this in any way. They have a negative point differential. It has not been a great start for them. They're going to get healthier. They'll get Justin Verlander. They'll get some other pieces back. But guys, once again, we can revisit that same conversation we were able to have 2 weeks ago when the season started. Hey, everyone's kind of at the same spot right now. This is your chance to pull ahead before other teams figure it out, in the case of Houston, or get healthier.
The Mariners are blessed right now. They're blessed that Astros are struggling. The A's are the A's. And they're blessed that the Rangers are only 7-6. Because we know the talent on the Rangers roster. We know the talent on the Astros roster. Yep. I think the Angels will angel it out when it's all said and done.
I think so, too.
And the A's will be the A's that we've known the past couple years. So, again, even with all the struggles they've had, they're still in this mix. And, of course, they're only 13 games in. They're going to be in the mix. But it could be a lot worse for these guys, man. You look at the whole division. It's struggling, man. Angels minus 10 differential. Mariners minus 21. Oakland minus 22, Houston minus 19. Houston's on a three-game losing streak right now. The two teams above the Mariners have lost one with the Rangers and two in a row with the Angels. There's an opportunity here. There's an opportunity just to keep things a bit close. But the messed up part is that the Astros play the Rangers in this next series. So either way, things are going to balance itself out with that series. But again, they're fortunate to be here right now. And also, it's crazy that I'm looking forward to Miller being on the mound today because he's the one who's played the most or thrown the most consistently throughout the season. So, yeah, man, opportunity. It's still there. Julio's going to go yard twice. You put that out there. I'm going to go ahead and lean my hat on that. But yeah, they're in a position still to strike.
Bump, I'm glad you mentioned the point differential, because again, the record is what it is. You can only take so much out of pure wins and losses. Like, I don't know that anyone looks at 5-8 for the Mariners and thinks they've played always like a team, that's a 5-8 team. They have at times looked like they should have two or three wins. But no matter, they are only two games back, and that's great news. But you mentioned that negative 21-point differential. It's the second worst in the division, the third worst in the American League. You are, on paper, a worse team than, for instance, like Houston right now, even though Houston's 4-10. So take advantage of an opportunity to have a leg up in the standings. I know it's not a lot. They're only a game and a half back of you, but still, this is a close division, just as it was last year. Start pulling ahead early. And like Bump said, let's hope it happens with Julio. completely taking off, right? Earlier in the show, we talked about how these core pieces of your team, Julio, Cal, even though he just had a couple home runs, JP, have been a little slow to start the mm-hmm. season, and that includes some of your big additions like Jorge Polanco.
Yeah, it's you got to catch fire. You know, you got to show some life, especially when you have the Astros being down, yet they're still one of the better hitting teams in the league. When it comes to team average, 266, that is fourth in the league. On base percentage, they're 10th in the league at 330. Slugging, they are 7th in the league, 421. And then OPS, they are 9th in the league. So listen, just like we listen to pass and talk about, okay, look, numbers are going to say that the Mariners are going to turn things around because they're trending in the right direction. You can look at the Astros and say the same thing. Like, look, they've had some big blowout losses. When they lose, they lose big. But you also look at their production at the plate and you go, all right, well, eventually the pitch is going to come around consistently. The defense is going to come around consistently. They're still doing a decent job at the plate. They probably don't look at the stats like this the way that we do.
Sure.
They focus on themselves one game at a time, one pitch at a time. All right, you guys say all that. But we're looking at just the bigger picture, and we think they're lucky to be in this mix, but you got to go right now because the Houston Astros are not going to be this team for long. And then we already know the Rangers, when it comes to all those categories that I just talked about, they're top five or top 10 in all those categories as well. This is a better hitting division than these teams are showing right now. The Mariners just have to catch up.
From the 253, Julio's a bust. Sorry, 710. I don't know if you can say anyone's a bust after the start he's had to his career. He's
one of the
best players. And yeah.
So irresponsible.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Someone said, Stacey, they're not points, they're runs. That was a joke I made earlier.
Yeah, it was a joke.
I think that if there's one area you're looking at and you're concerned, it's obviously strikeouts. The 2024 Mariners on pace to have more strikeouts than any other team, not just in baseball, but in baseball history. They're averaging 10.6 strikeouts per game. It's the worst mark in baseball. It's also almost hard to maintain how bad that is.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect that to turn around, but it's especially concerning given, Bump, how you built this team. You specifically moved on from players who struck out a ton, like Gino, like Teo, added players where you formed a lineup you thought would hit for a little more contact. You're not seeing it so far. What do you think? What are some theories you have? Because we don't know the answer.
I got several.
What are some theories you have as to what's behind this?
One theory is mentally, they're not connecting with the philosophy and the approach that they're being coached to be or to do. I say that because I look at the guys who are not here or on other teams. The Genos, Teoscar, JK, they're balling early in the season. Who knows? We've seen 10-game stretches of JK looking great, and then something happens and he falls off. So I'm looking at that. It could be just being overcoached or undercoached. Something's going on there mentally when they step into the play. Two, just pressure. Pressure. You're looking at Julio swings the bat so dang hard. It seems like every time he swings the bat, he's trying to go yard where sometimes, man, just slap it out to right. You know what I mean? Take that outside pitch and put it where it's supposed to be. Well, Polanco, I could imagine Polanco getting here, and he was described as like one of the saviors of this. We got Jorge Polanco. He's going to be great with him and Julio and JP getting going. And I could imagine not having success off the bat puts a little more pressure on you, and your team's not performing the way that you want to. I think JP's going to be fine. He's going to come around. Ty, you hold it down. Kyle, keep hitting bombs. So it's pressure, it's coaching, it's execution, it's intention. Put the ball where the pitch requires that you put it. Stop trying to pull things that ain't supposed to be pulled.
All right, let's bring on Brandon Gustafson. He's going to join us next. He has excellent information about the Mariners, great analysis and insight. I'm going to ask him the same question. What does he think is behind some of these strikeouts? And then we'll preview this upcoming series, a big weekend series against the Cubs. Don't go anywhere.